You no doubt have seen them on roadsides by buildings, maybe in front of remnants of buildings. I'm referring to those signs that mark locations as having a historic past. Often these signs are situated at locations where all that's left of that historic location is a recognition that's featured on that sign. And you know what? It doesn't have to be this way. I mean, isn't it more enjoyable, as well as educational, to visit a historic site where more than just the history lives on? Our first guest today is here to spotlight historical locations throughout New Jersey that could be lost forever. If recognition and, more importantly, preservation doesn't happen, these locations make up this year's list of the 10 most endangered historic places in New Jersey, released every year by Preservation New Jersey. Here to guide us through this year's list is our executive director, Kelly Raphael. How are you today, Kelly?
Great. Thank you for having me. How are you?
Good to have you here to talk about this, because it's one of those situations that, when you think about that, although it can be costly, nevertheless can be easily preventable. PreservationNJ.org is where you see the list and become a part of the effort that Kelly and I are going to talk about here. So just as a general idea, Kelly, what is it that you have set as the purpose of this list every year? What do you hope it's going to achieve?
Sure. So Preservation New Jersey, it's actually this year marks our 30th year of hosting the 10 most endangered historic sites list, which really the program and the list brings awareness to, right, our irreplaceable landmarks that reflect the rich, diverse, and diverse cultural, architectural, and social history of our communities throughout the state. And these sites are generally actually nominated by the public. So there is a very large, you know, public process. So we're hearing from you on, you know, sites that have been, you know, maybe long forgotten, abandoned, neglected, or just need that little push to get through, let's say, past redevelopment lines, if you will. You know, the support that they need to kind of, you know, shed light on, like, this, you know, threat that they have. So with the list each year, and we've changed sort of our role, PNJ's role. Normally it was a really like a public campaign, right? It's a public awareness campaign. It gets a lot of press. You'll see it in local newspapers. We have one large event that used to be held right in front of the State House to make our leaders and, you know, legislature aware of how these sites are doing in you know, with their communities. But since 2023, with this list, PNJ has now decided to take a more proactive approach. So those who are nominated on the list these last 3 years, if we are third consecutive year, we now provide technical assistance to help, you know, sort of guide those nominators and members of the community on how to turn these stories around. Because even though this list has been around for 30 years, about 60% of the program have, you know, turned around, have been saved, right? We still have, right, about 40% of sites that have been listed, you know, throughout the years that still face demolition or are still in neglected states.
And looking at the list this year, as it holds true for every year, it ranges in geographic locations. The locations range in age. Some are 100 years old. Some are as old as 300 years old. Purpose, the end condition. And something I noticed, too, is that and this list, too, has a couple of examples. They're currently not technically abandoned, but some of these locations have been kind of left to rot within themselves because even with ownership, the attention is lacking.
Yes, yes. We do see that a bit more, especially in perhaps, I want to say maybe more urban areas, right, where you see Patterson, Jersey City, or Trenton, where we have buildings which are, we called it, you know, demolition by neglect, where owners choose because it is, you know, as you mentioned in the beginning, it can be costly depending on, right, what the adaptive reuse is or what the condition of the building may be, where owners feel, you know, maybe at a loss, or they don't have the necessary funding in place. So they will let the building essentially go so that it gets to a point where there is no other alternative but demolition. And it is a tactic that we kind of see in the preservation world. So you will see buildings that have, you know, sort of those stories. Others, which are also on this list, like one of them is the Boiling House, which is in Bernardsville. It has been, you know, it is has an owner. However, the owner is choosing to redevelop that building along with a larger parcel. So we even see these buildings sort of become impacted because they're part of a larger redevelopment plan. And, you know, let's say 9 out of 10 stories, you know, those buildings are usually noted for demolition or slated for demolition as part of a redevelopment plan, right? Whether it be housing or commercial space or mixed use space. So, right, these owners are deciding, you know, right, like it is more cost effective for them to just remove that element and, you know, build new. So this list kind of sees both of those stories. And we're hoping that, you know, by bringing attention to these types of issues, will let, you know, property owners and developers specifically understand that there are other ways around, kind of having successful projects or having income generating properties by using, you know, reuse of historic buildings.
That brought to mind, too, one of our stations actually used to be located at what was once the Blairstown Railroad Station. And we got out to move to another facility. The people who bought that building, it was a contracting company. They wanted to preserve the integrity of the building. And a lot of the woodwork was still there. The ticket window was still there in the main office. And they were asking us, do you have photos going back as far as you can so we can do as much restoration as possible and keep the historic aspect while still making it a place for a modern day business to do its thing. And so it is possible, Kelly, to incorporate the past and the present, isn't it?
It is. Anything is possible. And, you know, that's what we try to stress. And that's where, you know, groups like Preservation New Jersey or the local historic preservation commissions in your communities comes into play, because they can provide, you know, resources or at least guidance in how to, you know, reutilize these buildings. You know, we understand, right, that, you know, not everything can be a house museum. We're kind of sort of gone with those days. But, you know, we can use those older homes for, you know, art center, other community space or businesses, right? Like it could be a construction company. It could be a florist. It, you know, right, there are other creative ways that we can reuse these buildings.
So Kelly Raphael, who is the executive director of Preservation New Jersey, preservationnj.org. The most endangered historic places in New Jersey list is where you can find there, along with how you can become a part of the work of Preservation New Jersey as a member. We'll get into that in a moment as well. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. I think also, Kelly, your list points out something that it's important for people to remember. Just because a location is designated and listed on the National Register of Historic Places, that's not a guarantee. That's not a safety net. That's just recognition of the past. It doesn't guarantee the future of that location, does it?
That is correct. This is a big misconception where many members of rights of public generally believe that if you're on the state or national register, there are protections that prevent demolition. It is not the case. Only if a property is publicly owned, so right, by a government agency, or is using public dollars, so right, your state, federal, or local funds, municipal funds, will then a review be triggered by the State Historic Preservation Office. So right, if there is a building that's in private hands, it's used private money, but it is listed on the state or national register, there is very little one can do to prevent said demolition. Obviously, right, we can advocate, you know, we can come out and sort of protest, we can, you know, write to elected officials, we can try and, you know, work with a private property owner, but, you know, there are every case is different, and there are different parameters on that. But I guess just as a general statement, just because something is listed does not mean the site has the protections it requires.
Obviously, New Jersey being one of the original 13 colonies, 13 states, there's a lot of historic locations to keep a focus on and do preservation with. That work, and Kelly mentioned the D word, dollars, that is a big part of the picture too, which brings us to this year's list as well, because it's really 10 plus 1. Talk about entry 11 on this year's list.
Yes. So with our 30th anniversary and given the current climate with specifically federal funding, we felt that we needed to really highlight and advocate for historic preservation funding. And if I can get just a moment just to kind of put it out there. So the Historic Preservation Fund is a nationally recognized fund, which is actually not tax dollars. So it is not our, you know, it's not relied on the taxpayer. It's based on a percentage of offshore oil. So it's really a kind of regenerating fund. And we take a very low percentage. I think it's about 1%, 1.2%, no more than that, that goes into the National Historic Preservation Fund. And what the National Historic Preservation Fund does, it funds all of the state preservation offices. It provides grants for, you know, intensive level surveys, National Register nominations, you know, underrepresented histories, some, you know, preservation, like, right, capital dollars to do preservation work, like stabilization, restorations, roof replacement, window, you name it. So this fund has been around for about 40 years, has not been increased since the time of its inception. And in the last 2 years, the fund is, you know, right, it's now expired. It expires every 10 years, and it has to be reauthorized. We have not received the reauthorization. It's been well over a year. It's kind of just been a continuing resolution. And unfortunately, if it's not reintroduced or reauthorized, you know, places like the state of New Jersey will lose millions of dollars in preservation funding. And we already are strapped because the federal government has cut funding for the National Endowment of Humanities, the National Endowment of the Arts, IMLF, which is our Library and Historic Society and Museums fund. I mean, that office is now completely gone. So this poses a great risk, you know, for places like New Jersey where, right, we're all gearing up for America's 250th and we're focusing on, you know, our Revolutionary War history and just, right, our general state history and how proud we are, and we want to see these sites open. But all of this funding really impacts what, you know, at the local level, what those historic societies, the nonprofits who own historic museums, the governments, the agencies that own historic houses or sites, it's really going to have a significant impact on how we celebrate 250th and, you know, right, the longevity of our site. So we really wanted to call attention to this. Preservation New Jersey has been to Washington since March. We are talking to our representatives on a frequent basis to try and, right, you know, promote and get this bill reauthorized. But, you know, we're all calling for people, you know, everyone out there to write to their legislators and have them, you know, support historic sites, especially now, right? Now that funding is, you know, very detriment.
Yes.
It was something we had to do. We wanted to call attention to. So that is our special 11th edition for this year.
And very well justified in calling attention to that. And for you listening, if you're a local official and you're hopefully aware of the historic value of locations within the area that you serve, it's certainly, I guess we would call this a verbal chain letter for you to address the elected official that's above you at the next level, for them to go to the next level and hopefully get the proper funding. Because I know what the line is, and we've talked about it here on the show frequently, The federal is saying to the state, we're not going to pick up the tab anymore. You guys do it. And to put it bluntly, New Jersey ain't got the money to do it. So it's got to be a combined effort for things like not just health care and education, but for preservation of our heritage. I mean, if you just look at this year's list, you can go back 300 years with the Andrew Marchand Tavern. You can go to some of the oldest in the nation, like the Monmouth Boat Club, founded in 1879. You want to go a little more recent, but still valuable history. You have the first skyscraper in the city of Jersey City, the Universal Building, which also has a radio history connection to with housing WAAT radio. Look that up and see how far back that goes into the ancient days of commercial radio. And without your attention to these sites, this history, history doesn't survive by itself. It has to have the attention, either learning through it after it has passed on physically, or even better, like I said back in the introduction, to preserve the physical, to bring a better understanding of the history that that physical location should always be around to represent. And that's why your support, your efforts, your teaming with Preservation New Jersey will help make this work be the success that it needs to be. You can do it through membership, through your time, through sharing on social media. So many ways. Find out more at preservationnj.org. We have been talking with their executive director, Kelly Raphael. Kelly, thank you for the work you do. The awareness and the urgency that you raise, both very valid. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much. Thank you.